First responders are known as a family. We have our own families, but we also have the families of the people that we work with, the people we serve with. And those families take on all shapes and sizes, literally and figuratively. In the fire department, that family is somebody you're with for 24 hours. That family is somebody that you run calls with. In the police department, it might be the zone partner, the district partner that you meet up with in the donut parking lot. I'm just kidding, not the donut parking lot. That's what I tease all my cop buddies about. But meeting up in those locations and kind of watching each other six and talking about a call a little later. In the military, it's people you might be deployed with. In the EMS world, hospital world, hospital, the pre-hospital care world, all these different areas have families. And these families are made up of teams of people, groups that get together and work towards a common goal and a common cause. We have our own families as well, the people we go home to. Could be a spouse, could be a boyfriend, a girlfriend, could be a partner, could be just kids, parents, whoever it is. Could even be a roommate that you've been with for a long time. But either way, these are kind of our families. And we have this separation that happens in these families because we have this work family and we have this home family. You hear people say, well, that's my work wife, that's my work husband. It's kind of a real thing because it's these people you spend so much time with. I know in the fire service, 24-hour shifts, it's a third of your life. So, you know, over a 30-year period, you're spending 10 years with that family, with that group. And if you stay in the same station, same area, or in a smaller department, you're with the same people a lot. And that family becomes very important. As a chaplain in my department, I find myself often doing weddings and funerals. And in those weddings and funerals, we talk about family. I just did a wedding this past weekend for a firefighter in Hillsborough County down here locally. And I said to the bride, I said, are you sure about this? Like in the middle of the wedding, I said, you know, you're marrying into a firefighter family. And I knew from the story that her father was a cop, which he thought was hysterical that she's marrying into a firefighter family. He's like, don't do it. Don't do it. We have fun with each other. We tease each other. But I said to her, and I said to the crowd there, you are marrying into the firefighter family. You're marrying into the first responder family. And that has good things and bad things about it. The good things are you're always going to have people that look out for you, people that care for you, people that love you. But you also have people that are going to pull your spouse away from you at times because of how this works. Because what we have is a situation where we run these calls, we see these critical incidents, we see this trauma, and then we have to figure out a way to identify it and deal with it. And sometimes the people that aren't there with us don't understand how to see that and how to understand it, so we don't know how to talk to them about it. So we say to them things like, oh, I'm fine, I'm good. I'm just going to go out with the crew and have a drink, or I'm going to go talk to the therapist, but I'm not sure I want you to come with me. And we may not say it like that, but we don't feel comfortable because that person's never been through the battle with us. And as a result of that, we have this separation that occurs. What I want to talk about today, and we're going to have a guest that comes on and discusses this with us a little bit, is how do we kind of join forces, first of all, and make these families actually work together? And number two, how do we kind of identify our fire family? How do we figure out who our first responder family is? And how do we make sure that our departments actually help and assist us? There are times where departments do a phenomenal job at this, and there are times where they don't. One of the stories I've told in times when I've taught this before is the story of Mark Rice, a friend of mine who passed away. Mark died a few years back, almost 3 years ago now. And I remember the fire department family coming together for him here, locally in the South Florida area. We came through, we did what we needed to do, we had the funeral for him, we took care of his family, but then we needed to get him back to Colorado where he is from for his family to be able to bury him, to be able to take his ashes and to be able to do what they wanted to in a ceremonial way out there. And I remember having a discussion thinking, how do I do this? Fortunately, Mark's brother-in-law works out in Arvada, Colorado, near where we were going, and he was able to make some connections for us. And what I found was I was overwhelmed at the end of that service. It was for a lot of reasons. Mark was very close to me. I think about him a lot even today, but it had been 2 weeks of just anguish and mourning and pain over this loss. And you're coming to the end of that and you're emotional. But I remember at the end of that moment, the end of that celebration, it was actually at the Red Rocks Amphitheater, which you've ever been, is just a gorgeous setting. I had a little room on the side. And the people who spoke did their thing and the testimonials were given and I did a prayer, and And then we got done, and the pipes and drums and the honor guard did their thing. And if you're a first responder, you know, doing their thing is just powerful. It's just, they just do their thing. It's amazing. It was a very professional group, and they did a great job. And they got done, and then they had me stand up to do a closing. And I remember, I very rarely lose it at a ceremony. I very rarely get emotional because you have to stay in the moment and try to help the family. But I was overwhelmed. And I remember thinking, these people, a lot of them don't even know Mark, don't know his family. They know Bryce, but they don't know anybody else. And because of their connection to Bryce and because of their connection to this unknown first responder, this person that's part of their family, they're doing what needs to be done. And this happens all the time. And I remember kind of losing it and trying to say thank you and just didn't know how to say it in front of everybody because it was powerful. It was a powerful moment to see first responder family take care of a first responder. That's our goal. But we can't just do it in a funeral. We can't just do it at a wedding. We have to do it all the time. One of the things I found interesting is that we'll do these things amazingly. We'll do these ceremonial pieces. We'll take care of things and then we'll walk away. And only the one or two firefighters or police officers or military who are really close to that family continue to take care. They continue to have conversations. They continue to communicate. They continue to take care of kids and follow up in different ways. But the vast majority move on, which is understandable. But we can't forget about those people left behind. This fire family, this first responder family, cop family, military family, EMS family, these are people that we should be taking care of all the time. And what I want to talk about today is really, let's get not just get to the, oh, somebody died, let's take care of them, or there was a line of duty death, let's take care of them. Instead, how do we take care of them at the beginning and after that? How do we take care of our people all along the way? I work at our headquarters facility now, and as a result, I get to see our light duty personnel a lot. If you are a first responder, you know that light duty is not where anybody wants to be. We sign on to do the job, to do this action-packed, amazing, all-day-long job. We love it. We love the adrenaline. We love all the things we do, type A, type B, whatever you are, you still love the adrenaline of it. And these are individuals who are either, some of these are females who are pregnant and are towards the end of their carrying their child and about to give birth or just coming back. But people with injuries, back injuries, leg injuries, some with cancer, all kinds of situations. And so they find themselves up at our headquarter facility, working in our shop with our fleet, working on a computer. During this pandemic we're having right now, typing in 214s. If you know anything about ICS, they're literally sitting there typing in names so that we can make sure we get reimbursed by FEMA. Miserable. And then if they get the unfortunate task of having to sit at the front desk and answer the phones, oh no. It's horrible. This is not what people want to do. But as a result of that piece and the fact that I'm also the chaplain and work in our professional development area, a lot of them find themselves talking to me and I find out, hey, what are you up here for? We get conversations started and we find out that, you know, these are the reasons they're here. And we find out that a lot of times they're on their own. So we've tried to make it a point to go, hey, how do we help you through this time where you're somewhere you don't want to be? This obviously isn't where you want to be. I tell the story about a young man who was there a few years back and I happened to be up there at the time and I said, hey, how are you doing? And he's limping really bad. I mean, dragging the right foot behind him. He goes, I'm doing pretty good. I'm like, you are? Yeah. And he had an accident, a motorcycle accident, broken his leg, lower leg. And he's dragging the leg behind him. And I go, are you sure you're okay? He goes, yeah, I'm getting cleared today. I'm like, you're getting cleared today. And he literally went into the doctor, dragged that foot into a straight up position and walked like he had no injury whatsoever for about 20 seconds. So the doctor went, oh yeah, you're good. Signed him off. And the next day he dragged his foot into work and did that for about a month till he finally healed up. That's how desperate people are to get back to this world, to get back to what we do. But when we're not able to do that, or when there's things going on like financial stress, like family stress, like injury, like mental trauma, physical trauma, whatever it is, we have to be able to step in and help. And the first thing we have to do is we have to identify who our family is. Our family is our first responder family, the people we work with. We know that already. But our family also is the people who aren't here anymore with us. And I'm not talking about the people who have passed away. I'm talking about the retirees. We forget about our retirees a lot. We have these people who walk through this amazing career, do an amazing job, leave their mark on our department, and then we go, okay, see ya, and we forget about them. These are part of our family members. We have to be able to take care of them. And later on, I'm going to talk about some specific things we can do to engage them with us, to let them be a part of it. Now, they don't have to. They may decide, hey, fire service, the police department, the military, I'm good, I'm done, I enjoyed my career, I'm going to move on. But some people still want to be a part of things. How do we keep them engaged and involved? We're going to talk about that a little bit. We're going to talk about our extended family, those family members of our first responder family. So the spouse of that captain I work with, the kid of that lieutenant I work with, something happens to them, how do we step in and help there? And the last thing we're going to talk about is how do we deal with injury or death to a firefighter or a firefighter family member? We're going to discuss all of that today, and we're going to make sure that we have kind of a plan for you and your department to be able to step in and help. It's not a problem of wanting to help. Firefighters help everybody. Police officers help everybody. Military personnel, these are individuals who live to help. But as a first responder, we sometimes need assistance from our departments, from our jurisdictions to help us get to that point. So we're going to talk about how to do that, how to set up a program. And here in a moment, we're going to meet a guy named Josh. He's going to come talk to you about his experience with his family, some loss, some tragedy, and some things that he's done in his family to help him be the leader he can be and also love his kids, his spouse, and be able to kind of give some examples to you that you might be able to use as well. All right, so this is Josh Lauer. We said that right, because I remember when I first met you, I thought it was Lower, and that's what...
Everybody calls me Lower from time to time, since I was in T-ball.
So Josh and I work together at the fire department. I have a lot more time on than him, of course, so I'm more senior, seasoned, all that stuff. But I actually knew your wife when she was a really little girl. I coached her sister and brother, so we got to know each other pretty well very quickly, going, how did this happen? And just like me, you married out of your league, just
like I did. Yeah, married up.
Yeah, married up. That's what we did for sure. So Josh is somebody who has kind of a cool story. So I want you to, first of all, just kind of introduce yourself. Tell everybody who you are, kind of how you got in the fire service, stuff like that.
Okay, yeah. So I'm Josh Lauer. Grew up in this area, Palm Springs, Palm Beach County area. Went to regular school, actually bounced around. I went to UCF, ended up at FAU for a little bit, thought I wanted to be a teacher, and then ended up at Palm Beach State College after a friend had put the bug in my ear a couple times about the fire service. I went and rode with him, got into EMT, did my medic, ended up going to get my fire inspector and my bachelor's. Finally got hired by Green Acres Fire Rescue. Spent 2.5 years there. And actually, one of our chiefs called me one day. He's like, did you apply? I'm like, apply for what? He goes, did you apply for the county? I go, I don't even have a CPAT. What are you talking about? Hang up. Couple minutes later, 30 minutes later, he calls me. He goes, CPAT, 4 o'clock. Get over to Palm Beach State College. So, you know, mount up, go over there, do the CPAT, put in my application. And a year later, I was with the county.
Wow.
So 2.5 years of Green Acres, and then I'm in my 5th or 6th year now with county since 2015.
Cool.
So,
yeah. And you have a wife and 2 kids?
2 kids, yes.
How old are they?
I have 2 kids. Jacob is 3, and Landon's 8 months.
8 months, okay. Mm-hmm. I love pulling your Instagram up every once in a while, because literally you'll be like, hey, it's 10 o'clock, Jake and I are hanging out, daddy daycare, who's up for whatever, and you like just have some type of adventure. You're also a DJ, which is the first thing I found out about you. And I thought one of the funniest videos was you DJing for your kid during when coronavirus first started. Mm-hmm. What did you do? You just like set up this whole like playlist and a video, and I was dying.
Yeah, so a lot of DJs were doing, you know, Facebook, Instagram lives, just, you know, keeping people entertained during quarantine. So I threw it up in the back patio, set up my equipment, put out the slide. And basically was just DJing for my neighbors and my son. And he's running around having a ball.
A lot of Hakuna Matata, you know.
Yeah, started out with some Disney. My Disney mix is actually really popular. Every time I go to a bar, if I play that, it always gets asked for more, you know. It's Lion King, Little Mermaid, Aladdin. I play all the classics.
It's kind of funny how you go from the DJ who's doing certain things and all of a sudden you have kids and you're like, wait, what just happened here? So, one of the cool things that we've talked about is you are somebody who has done a lot of self-development. I lead the professional development for our department, Officer Development Academy. So we've talked a lot about some of the things you've done in your own life. So share a little bit about kind of how that started for you, why you did it, and then maybe even like some of the things you've learned or this is a guy, we're talking like books, we're talking about conferences, we're talking about all kinds of different things.
Yeah, so I would say it started back, you know, ending high school, going into college. There were just things that I noticed that some people got. They knew how to do things a certain way, and for whatever reason, I felt like I didn't know how to do it, and I wanted to know how to do it. And so I'd start researching it. I'd go Google it. I don't even know if YouTube was around then. But I would find whatever resource I could, torrents, whatever I could, to find, you know, access to books or, you know, information regarding the topics I wanted to learn about. I think one of the greatest ones I got into back in the day was neuro-linguistic programming, which is like how words affect you know, the way you hear it or the way you interpret it. Like if I say I have to go to work, it's an obligation. But if I say I get to go to work, it's like, hey, you know, this is fun. I get to go to work. It's a blessing, an opportunity, as opposed to, oh, I have to go to work.
Yeah.
So a neurolinguistic program is spinning words to trick your brain to make you want to do things. Anyways, you know, fast forward, got into the fire service. I think I got a little bit complacent, or maybe just like, you know, I hit my career. I started hitting all the marks, all my check boxes, you know, got married, had kids, had the career. And I think I just kind of fell into a rut.
Happens a lot, yeah.
Didn't know I was in a rut. And what woke me up was actually, we took a course down in Fort Lauderdale that a friend kind of tricked me into going to. It's like, hey man, come take this course. Like, what is it? You know, he called me and he acted really interested. He's like, how's life, man? How's
those
life?
People.
Yeah. I'm like, what are you selling? He's like, well, I'm not really selling anything, but I think you should come take this course. He explained it like a diluted Tony Robbins. So we went there and started that course. What really got me going was a back injury in the fire service. Mm. So here it is. I identify as a firefighter, you know, a DJ, a husband, a father, you know, family, whatever else you want to add in there, all the little microcosms of what you identify as. And here's this thing that is one of my main sources of being. And it's like, now it's come to a halt. I got a back injury. Luckily, I was able to get light duty. I was, you know, the mailman for the county.
I was just sharing before you got here the intro about how everybody hates light duty.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I'm happy it's there. Yeah. I'd rather be paid and whatever. But yeah. It was rough. So I'm driving around in the car delivering inner office mail, and I'm listening to the radio. Long stretches going to the headquarters stations, and it didn't take me but, you know, 30 minutes to be like, this is terrible. This is terrible. Like, I can't keep listening to the radio, hitting channels, whatever. And, you know, I was like, what about audiobooks?
Yeah.
You know, I hadn't listened to a podcast prior to that moment.
Okay.
So I knew what podcasts were, but I never really dove into podcasts. So I start with some audiobooks. I always wanted to read Viktor Frankl's
Man's Search for Meaning. Phenomenal book. Yeah.
Amazing book. It actually like makes me want to be a minimalist. It was actually the reason I started shaving my head.
Oh, really?
I mean, I was balding anyway. But let's be real. But instead
but
of trying
I did
to,
it for yeah, minimal. Yeah, yeah, I gotcha.
Instead of trying to keep what I had left and get a haircut for $20 a month, I was like, yeah, let's just give her the hair. So I started shaving my head because in the book they talk about how they stripped them of everything.
Yeah.
When you're stripped of everything, what do you have left? You still have choice.
Yeah.
You have a say in the matter of how you're gonna, you know, handle that situation. And so that was kind of like deer in headlights, or, you know, the light bulb. I'm like, man, I haven't been choosing to do things a certain way. I was in a rut at the time. So I started looking into certain other books. And I don't even know how I came across this book. It was Russell Simmons. And it was a book on meditation.
Russell Simmons.
Run DMC. Okay. And so I start listening to this audiobook, and chapter after chapter, it's saying the same thing. Meditation helps in jails. Meditation helps in schools. Meditation helped me get off drugs. Meditation helps here. Meditation helps there. I'm like, okay, I get the pattern, chapter by chapter. Let's get to what you have to do. Skip to the end of the book, and I listen to his technique on meditation. And I gave it a try. And, you know, first it's hard to quiet the mind.
Oh,
it's,
for sure.
It's hard to sit in silence. It's hard to know if I'm even doing it right, if I'm breathing right. How, you know, is this working? Is it not? Well, the old school, how do I do this, kicks in. I rekindle that fire of, okay, I don't know how to do this. Let's learn it. YouTube. Just start diving into all these guided meditations, all these different things. And it literally changed my life. Like, here we go. Yeah. But it shifted how I handle things. And being able to identify things that are controlling me versus, you know, reaction versus responding. I was able to quiet the mind enough to realize certain things. And so there's a couple cool guided meditations. We can share them in the thing. So there's a 20-minute F it meditation where they literally cuss the whole time. And she's like, F this, F that, F what that person said, F wow. that, you know, and it's cool because it's like, for somebody who's a sailor, I'm like, this is not a traditional, you know, kumbaya, you know, sitting, whatever. She just, you know, so she's got my attention. And it was really cool because it helped me release some things I was carrying, yeah. holding on to, you know, resentment and just holding on to things that, like, I didn't even know I was holding on to. So meditation kicks in, right? I learned about meditation. I started diving into that. I developed my own little technique. And there's meditation, there's thinkatating, there's all kinds of different styles of meditation. Yeah. You can sit quietly, you can focus on your breathing, you can actually like dive into problems you're dealing with. So I kind of got that little tip and tool in my toolbox, yeah. right? So I'm diving into all this, you know, so I'm doing the audiobooks. Then I hear about podcasts. Hmm. So I started diving into the podcast. And this all is going to come together. It leads up to what we're going to end up talking
yeah,
about.
Yeah.
But I start getting all these little tools that I don't realize I'm getting at the
yeah.
time.
Yeah.
So I jump on the likes of Tom Bilyeu and Jocko Willink.
Yeah.
And so one of the key things, Tom Bilyeu is all about unlocking the mind,
yeah.
like hacking the brain, mm-hmm. how like top performers, you know, do what they do,
yeah.
why they do what they do, the microcosms of the brain and being able to navigate that. But both of them, Jocko Willink and Tom Bilyeu, had something in common, and it's extreme ownership.
Extreme ownership, yeah.
Extreme ownership. And it was a foreign concept to me. I got it. You know, take responsibility for your actions, which is something we all get said by our parents. Well, some
yeah.
of us get said to our parents growing up. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Good parents. Yeah.
Good parents. And so so I take it and I start hearing it. And the one that got me was Tom Bilyeu. And I don't quote me. He says it a certain way and I might mess it up. But he says, like, be so extreme in your ownership that if you're driving down the road and you get hit by a drunk driver and become a paraplegic or whatever, that you're brave enough and strong enough to take the power back and say, it's my fault. I chose that route.
Mm.
I didn't clear the intersection. Instead of blaming that person
wow.
and saying, he shouldn't have been drunk driving. He hit me. It's his fault. You get to say, no, I chose that route.
Wow.
I hit the gas or whatever the case may be, or I wasn't paying attention. Or, you know,
yeah.
it's extreme. But when you do that, you're not putting the power in this person's hands. You're taking it and,
yeah.
and owning it and deciding what to do from there.
Yeah, and Willink talks about, you know, the fact that they had a soldier who died
mm-hmm.
Basically under his command, friendly fire, the whole same thing. I don't remember mm-hmm. every detail, but the same thing about walking in and going, no, this is on me, where he could have passed it down
mm-hmm.
and probably been okay, but literally faced court-martial and possible arrest. And, I mean, all kinds of stuff, and he went, mine, ownership. And mm-hmm. that's... those examples, the drunk driver, the one where he probably really didn't do anything wrong when you really read the story,
mm-hmm.
and they both went, no, this is it. I mean, that's different. And I want to get back to one thing you said about meditation, because you made a comment. I don't want to breeze by it. You said there's a lot of different kinds, right?
Right.
And there's a lot of different views on it. And I grew up in an environment where I was taught by a church person that meditation was bad and evil.
Oh, wow.
Because... what it does is, and this is literally what it said, it opens your mind up and it empties everything else so that bad stuff can get in. That's literally what I was taught about meditation. So I remember thinking, whoa, meditation. And I remember somebody finally, Dina Ali from North Carolina, a friend of mine who's a firefighter, I remember her saying, here's what I want you to do. And she says, you open your mind. And I went, I don't know if I'm supposed to open my mind. like, you know, and I remember her explaining, it's quieting the soul. And it's quieting the mind and it's turning everything else off so that, and for me, a lot of times meditation is prayer.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times it's quieting the mind so I can talk to God.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just important for people to go, no matter where you come from, no matter your background, meditation is a positive thing if done right. Now, if done wrong and all we do is quiet and focus on all the bad stuff,
mm-hmm.
you know that too, where people get meditating, they're always angry because you're like, well, you meditate on all the bad stuff
right.
all the time. So I just want to make sure I made that point, because I think it's imperative that meditation can be what you need it to be. It can be what I need it to be. And it can be even more spiritual than some, for some, not others. But you have to be willing to go, let me get outside my normal stuff
mm-hmm.
and let me see what else is out there.
Well, this is a perfect transition, because meditation would get me to zero.
Yeah.
It gets me to that place where, okay, the past is the past, the future is the future. Whatever this person said or whatever's bothering me is gone.
Mm-hmm.
But then guess what happens? Resigned and cynical, negative self-talk comes
yeah.
back in. And so that was my next transition. My next YouTube podcast dive in, and I came across Norman Vincent Peale's Power of Positive Thinking.
Okay.
So I start diving into it's neuro-linguistic programming. It's the whole how you talk to yourself and the negative self-talk. And so I kept finding that I would get to that place where, okay, I'm good. But then a few hours later, you know, the negativity's creeping back in. And I have a couple theories on that. So as firefighters, what do? Train for the worst, hope for the best. So I don't know if over time, as I got into this career, like, because I was always a happy-go-lucky person, but as time went on, I just started getting this like, you know, negative vibes,
beat down, yeah.
Whatever it is. You know, I don't want to blame the fire service because extreme ownership, but I think there's something to be said there where you're always running other people's emergencies, or you're always thinking, how bad can this be?
Yeah.
But the other side of the stick is, how good can this be? Yeah. How often do you actually sit and think, how much better can my life be?
Yeah.
How good can this situation, how can this situation get better? I do now because I focus. But so back to the meditation would get me to zero. It'd get me to that clearing where I could now create or come up with whatever I wanted to come up with, but I wasn't creative enough. There was nothing for me. There was, like, if I were to close my mind and think of positivity or think of anything to get me out of a negative situation, it wasn't there. It was non-existent. I knew of some positive phrases, or I just didn't have a regimen or any type of life hack to that, you know?
Yeah.
And so as I was diving into, you know, Norman Vincent Peale's Positive Power of Thinking, I would start, anytime he put out an awesome quote or, a verse from the Bible, I would copy and paste it, put it in one of the Instagram create things and make a framed picture of them.
Yeah.
And then I would swipe through them at night or in the morning. So then I would have a folder created in my phone with those where I could review them.
Yeah.
So now I'm starting getting these phrases in my head, you know? And let me digress, because I know some people are spiritual and some people aren't. Some people have faith and some don't, and that's fine. And I still don't know where I stand on that. I believe in a higher power. I was born and raised Catholic, and somewhere along the way, you know, I became a heathen. I went around Christmas time with the family, and that was it. And, you know, meditation doesn't have to be spiritual. You don't have to be, you know, faith-based to read some of these things. The Bible is filled with positive phrases to give you a way to live. Or, you know, it's just, to me, it's almost like another self-help book or a guided, you know, mindfulness book for me. That's kind of what it was. So I'm reading these things, and I start seeing a pattern between that and some of the other work I'm doing. And the positivity and how it changes people's lives. So I'm like, what can go wrong? You know, let me give it a try. Let me see what happens. So I'd get up in the morning, I'd get to zero, then I'd start filling my head with these thoughts. You know, a simple one is renew my mind, renew my spirit. So like when I get in a rut, I just stop for a minute and be like, renew my mind, renew my spirit. Give myself a chance to reset. Give myself a chance to get out of that always worst case scenario, you know? And I'm not 100% good at it. I still have my days, you know, we all get in them, but at least now I have some tools. So I was actually telling you this one, and this is my life hack. I should probably do like, you know, my
copyright,
own podcast.
Copyright this. Mark the time, mark the date, it's yours.
So what I ended up coming up with was 4:13, which is, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me.
Yep.
PMA League, and that's Positive Mental Attitude League, stands for love, ease, appreciation, attitude of gratitude is the G, giving, understanding, and then E is ease and eager for more. Yeah, so that transitioned into, you know, the next part of my search, and that was I came across Bob Proctor and Abraham Hicks. And so when I talk about I believe in a higher power, I didn't know where my faith was. It was kind of the Abraham Hicks thing, because she calls it source when she talks about it. They talk about abundance and love and gratitude. And she's the one that talks about ease and eager for more. And I didn't know what those were. I had to dive into them. It was a long Google, YouTube. I did so much like diving in and research. That was probably an easy 3 to 6 months of my life, just trying to get to the point where I understood what they were talking about and what it actually meant. And ultimately, it was like slowing down enough to actually like feel grateful for something. Thank you for this chair that I'm sitting. Thank you for this AC in this house. It's so hot out here in the South Florida, right? Yeah. You know what I mean? Just actually taking a moment to be grateful for the littlest things, right? Mm-hmm. And I start doing this stuff, and I'm starting to notice a switch. Hmm. I'm giving appreciation where it wasn't done before. I'm giving gratitude where it wasn't given before. And I just start focusing on, instead of my life is hard or this situation's difficult, I just start thinking life is easy.
Yeah.
Life is easy. It's what you make it. It's easy. Life is easy. And so the eager for more part, this is like the weird part that it might may or may not make sense to everybody listening. But, you know, we get so caught up in more, more, more. I want more, you know, and some people that might be achieving more. Some people that might be buying more, whatever more is for everybody. It might be abs. It might be, you know, drinking more tequila. Who knows?
I would take abs.
You know?
I would take it.
Yeah. So, but we're always looking over there.
Yeah.
It's never enough.
The grass is greener kind of idea, yeah.
It is. Okay, so this is where I like what she teaches, Abraham Hicks. She teaches, you know, the universe, source, whatever you want to call it, God, is for expansion.
Hmm.
Like, they don't, like, God or, you know, whatever, however, I don't know how she words it. I'm spitfiring here. But it's okay. Like, the universe doesn't want you to sit still.
Okay.
It doesn't want you to be complacent. You know, look around you. There's people always developing new stuff. There's growth. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so what she teaches is grateful for all I have and eager for more.
Hmm.
So instead of just being like, this isn't enough, I need more, I need more, I need more, and being ungrateful, it's slowing down to say, I love everything that I have.
Yeah.
I appreciate everything I've had, everything I have now, and everything I'm going to have. Like, I'm grateful. I'm open to receiving more. I'm eager for that more. I understand there's a gap. There's always going to be a gap. You get hired as a firefighter. What's next? I want to be a driver. I want to be a lieutenant, whatever it is. You know, that's the track that people teach
you.
Yeah. Whether you realize that you're just going down that track because people are coaching you to, or is it really what you want?
Yeah.
And so, okay, I'm a firefighter. Well, is that enough? Some people it is. You know, other people are like, well, now I need to be a lieutenant. And so now you got this gap and you're trying to close the gap and you can work towards the gap. And that's where goal setting and all that comes in too. But being grateful and learning all you can and appreciating the firefighter while you're the firefighter until you reach that goal. And then the next, you know, or same with any aspect, insert anything, you know, and that's how that works.
And I think part of it is your perspective, because you talked about the difference in people's viewpoint. For me, my faith in God is huge for me.
Mm.
And so for me, like as you're talking, I'm listening and thinking, okay, there's a passage of scripture that I always go to. I both know how to be a base and how to abound. Mm-hmm. The verse, basic idea is I know how to have a lot and how to have a little. Mm. And it's basically, I'm choosing to be content in whatever situation I'm at.
Right.
And I think for me, that's what I go back to. Maybe not a mantra like you're talking about, but this is why we're trying to explain to people, whatever background you come from, you can find a way to find happiness and to find joy. And even in this 2020, I have people all the time say to me, 2020 is the worst year ever. And I mean, listen, it's been bad.
Mm-hmm.
Let's be honest. I saw somebody post something today and it said, okay, who had seeds coming from Asia as August?
I heard about that one.
Like that's the next thing. Like who had that? Like, who, and so it's this, it's, I get it. I get we're frustrated. I get that things are going on. But to find the individuals who have a balance and perspective and focus before all this came,
mm-hmm.
for whatever reason you have it, it allows you to deal with what's going on, because you go, okay, I know this isn't perfect, but I'm happy with my family, what I have, where I'm at. And I find that even the people who've gone through serious tragedy and loss, which we're talking about today too, have a way to walk through that, which we're going to talk about with you in a moment. But the other thing on the career path, I want to make sure I stop on this too. I've found myself, I'm an EMS captain in our department, and the next step is chief.
Mm-hmm.
And I have people saying to me, you got to be a chief. You got to be a chief. And I have a desire to go be a certain position. But I've also said to people, it's okay if I don't. It's not something I have to have. And it doesn't make me better or worse than anybody else.
Hmm.
But I know people who, exactly like you said, is, well, the next step. And it's this year mark. And this is, so I have to go do this. No. You have to choose where you're supposed to be content, where you are. And then is there more? And maybe that more is spending more time with your family. Maybe that more is making more money somewhere else. Maybe that more is getting a different career. I tell people all the time, we talk about this 25, 30, 35 year career. I go, maybe for you, it's a 12 year firefighter career and then it's something else.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's where you're supposed to be. That's where God wants you to be for the rest of your time.
Mm-hmm.
And I've talked about, even for us, I said, you know, if you're in anywhere and somebody has like a pension and drop, there's all these turns. Well, you got to do 25 years and then there's this drop. And I go, hold on. What if at 25 years I said, well, I'm done. Well, there's all kinds of money out. Okay, what if I said I was done and I'm going to do something else? What if I went and got my doctorate and taught at a college? Well, why would you want to teach at a college? Because it'd be fun.
Right.
So I think that we're saying kind of the same things, and I want to make sure people understand, you don't have to have the same perspective Josh has, and you don't have to have the same perspective I have. What you have to have is a focus and a perspective that prepares you for your life.
Right.
And I, some of the authors you mentioned, some of them I've read. Some of them I have no idea who they are. That's the best part about this. We have a professional development library at our headquarters. There's probably 50 authors in there I've never even looked at, but I've just, they've been recommended. They're there. Then there's others I know really, really well. So learn what appeals to you. Jocko Willink is awesome.
Yep.
I love listening to his books because him and, is it Leif? I can't remember the other guys.
Oh, yeah. It's
the other author in there. They have these gravelly, like, marine voices. And it's just so funny because you're like, I want to be as cool as that dude right there.
Yeah.
And other people listen to it. I can't listen to it. It's horrible. Find what works for you, but figure out a way to, don't, I tell people all the time, don't wait to find your coping skill. Don't wait to find your coping mechanism. Yeah. Figure this stuff out ahead of time. So I think you've done an amazing job of that. And I think the thing I want you to kind of shift into here is to talk to them about, you talked a little bit about your back injury, and then you've got this family going on, and then I know you suffered another tragedy. So kind of talk through what happened there for you. And I know I walked through a little bit of this with you guys and saw it kind of firsthand. So what was it that took place, and how did preparation lead you to that? And then how did you walk through as it happened? And I'm sure it wasn't perfect. We talked about that before. So.
Yeah. Before we hit that, there's two more things that are going to pertain, because this builds up to how that happened. And so the other two people that I dove into were David Goggins and Andy Frisella.
Oh, great.
And so
Mental
Toughness Academy. You know, I've been talking about meditation. I've been talking about the love and the abundance and the soft side of the world, right? But here comes these hard, you know, these these guys that...
Did you just bleep yourself?
I bleep myself. That's good. Yeah, like these guys that...
We didn't bleep him. He actually just figured it out.
These guys that went through the ringer.
Yeah.
You know, one guy, I think he was shot in the face. He was Andy Frisella, I believe he was shot in the face, if I remember correctly, his story, and or knife in the face or something. So he was dealing with a scar. He was overweight. You know, he has a story. He owns a first form company, but he puts out a podcast, and it's he put out the challenge 75 hard.
Oh yes, okay,
yeah. And so I actually ended up trying that challenge. You know,
that's a hard challenge.
But him and David Goggins are all about mental toughness. You know, don't. You're only operating on whatever percent of your brain, 10% of your brain, you know, 40%. When you think you're done, you're nowhere near done.
Yeah.
Push it harder. When you wake up in the morning, that thing you don't want to do, go do it.
Embrace the suck.
Embrace the suck.
Yeah, he says it all the time,
Oh, you don't want to work out today? Guess what? Today's the day you're going to work out.
Yeah.
Oh, you don't want to pick – I've noticed that, like, around the fire station, I'll do things that, like, I normally wouldn't do. Oh, that trash can, the bags hanging over the thing, normally walk by 100 times. No, I don't want to do it. Nobody else wants to do it. But today, I'm going to be the guy to do that, because nobody wants to. The stuff that you don't want to do is, like, now my focus. It's like, oh, the house needs to be cleaned. The toilets need to be scrubbed. I don't want to do that. Today's not the day I want to do that. Guess what? Because I don't want to do that, I'm going to do
that. My wife's not in here, right? Let's just skip that one, because she loves doing that. So.
Yeah. So anyways, awesome. So they teach basically, you know, harden up the brain. You know, harden up your mind. Do hard stuff to push you past what you think you're capable of handling. And so that kind of, you know, was a whole nother aspect that, like, here I am hearing all the, you know, the soft side is, oh, you meditate. Oh, you know,
we're in a
field where ego and macho man is the way, you know? And if you're anything other than that,
you're weak.
Go pound sand or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
And I get it. You know, there's a certain toughness you have to have for this job, but there's an, you know, dark side to this job that if you don't, you know, harden your mind and get your mind right and be able to tackle some of the stuff we deal with, then, you know, it's going to be a rough go. So all of that was my dive in. I mean, I was heavy 3 months of now I'm getting up at 5 a.m. in the morning to meditate because that's what the elite do, right? I started studying all these people. You know, Jocko gets up at 4 a.m.
Yeah.
Tom Bilyeu talks about getting up in the morning, taking cold showers. Who is, I'm actually trying to think of the cold shower guy. Wim Hof. So I got into Wim Hof breathing techniques. I started diving into this whole community of, like, trying to hack your brain and get better.
Yeah.
Right. So tying into that course I talked about before, my wife and I get conned into going to this course.
Which means your wife gets conned into going
to
the course.
Well, she saw what it was about. She's like, I want to do it. I said, okay. Paid the money to have her join me. And so the first part is all about getting out of your own way. They backdoor the English language. So that's how I explain it. They change the English language a little bit to form these distinctions
and then they kind of coach you into seeing your own BS.
Right? Okay, gotcha.
So, or blind spots. BS, blind spots.
Good job.
Instead
good
of,
job.
You know, dull S word, it's blind spots. So a blind spot is like, you know what you know what you don't know, you don't know what you don't know.
Okay.
We know how to be firefighters.
Yeah.
We know we don't know how to be a brain surgeon.
Right.
But we don't know that we don't know how to XYZ, whatever it is. You know, you read a book, you get enlightened on a new subject, mm-hmm. you know, or you stub your toe and you find out that day you can stub your toe on that thing. So now I need to watch that. You know what I mean? Something happens and you start to realize things. You. And so they kind of hack you into your own BS blind spots. And what they teach or what they kind of coach you on is there's patterns you're running. Something happened to you a long time ago and you're running a pattern because it happened to you. That person picked on you on the playground. So now you don't feel worthy because somebody picked on you. You failed miserably at getting a job. So now you're not, you know, whatever. Your parents didn't love you. You know, they had extreme cases when I was there where they brought somebody up and a girl had gotten so this is where it gets weird. She was raped by her family. But when they bring her up there, this is the teaching point here. They draw two circles on the board, right? And I've had this conversation with you. And mm-hmm. This is one of the key things that helped me with my tragedy and my loss. And I'll tie all this in together. And one circle is stories. And the other circle is what happened. And then, you know, there's middle. So something happens. We'll use her case. She was raped per, you know, they break it down and say raped is a term that law created or that humans created, right? Mm-hmm. So in the physical world, what happened? And so she goes to explain, I got touched and da-da-da-da-da, whatever. And we don't need to hear exactly all the details. So you were touched. What else? Me, you know, bad things were said to me. I was belittled. I was degraded, whatever. Okay, that's what happened. What are the stories around that? And she had a lot of them.
Yeah.
I'm not worthy. I can't trust guys.
Yeah.
And list goes on. And so they ask her about her life. And she had, a kid from, I don't know if it was multiple, I can't remember if it was multiple kids or whatnot, you know, but she had a kid and couldn't keep guys in her lives. Why? Well, for them, their explanation, who knows? There's multiple reasons. You know, you never know why anybody's life is what it is. But the stories of not being worthy and not mm-hmm. being able to trust guys, she just had a pattern. She's running the same game, right? Okay, so when you apply that to, say, our career, you run a bad call. What happened? You ran a bad call. What are the stories around it? It's sad. It's tragic. I can't live with this. Whatever you create around that.
Yeah.
Well, you have the choice, or I know, this is what I learned, you know, through mm-hmm. Wim Hof and reading all these things is, with this big brain of ours, you can choose what you want to believe if you identify it, if you can get the blind spot out of there and bring it to light, which is what I do when I meditate. I'll wake up in the morning, I'll sit quietly, I'll focus on my breathing, and then I'll start thinking, what's bothering me? What did I do wrong with my wife? What did I do wrong at work? Or like, I just think of things after I quiet my mind and get to zero and fill it with positivity. Then I'll kind of like, I call it thinkitate. I'll try to think through some of my problems and try to figure out, you know, what happened.
Yeah.
What's the story around it? How can I live powerfully around that? Right.
Okay.
So transition to what you asked me about the loss. So we were expecting our second child at the time and we were 38 weeks pregnant. I was actually on shift. We were excited. My wife called me. She told me she was having, contractions or pain or whatever mm-hmm. it was at the time. And on the first baby, she had Braxton Hicks. So, you know, we found out she just needed fluid on the first go round. Mm-hmm. So we were like, not too concerned. She goes to the hospital. Contractions start getting more. We were thinking we're having a healthy baby boy or healthy baby. I'm sorry. We didn't know the sex at the time. And she goes, one ultrasound, nothing. Two ultrasound, nothing. I freak out, leave work. Come, get there for the third ultrasound, nothing. Non-viable baby, dead baby. Mm-hmm. So at the time, I hadn't used any of my techniques. It was just shock of the matter, dealing with the loss of a baby. And my immediate thing, I just fell into my wife and tried to console her and make sure she was good. Prayed, hugged her, consoled her. It was an S sandwich. And at the time, I didn't know that all the stuff that I had done, all the work that I had done leading up to that was basically going to be almost a guidebook on how to handle it, right? Mm-hmm. I can talk about it. It's the lines are blurred now because it's like I accepted it almost, not immediately, mm-hmm. but it was pretty quick how right. I transitioned from loss to acceptance.
Right.
And I don't know if that was just me and how I deal with loss or if it was all the tools and techniques, and I'll explain.
Yeah.
And so we're in the hospital, 2-3 days go by, the baby finally comes out. I think the baby came out a little quicker, but we were in the hospital for a little while. And you know, to be graphic and be vivid, we held the baby, took pictures with the baby. And we actually, she was so hopped up on drugs that she actually didn't remember or didn't like really feel that she got to see the baby and deal with the baby. So when it came time to make a decision, or when she kind of like sobered up from the drugs that they pushed to help, you know, push the fetus along, flood of tears, she was crying. And we, you know, after the fact had even brought the baby back in to spend more time with the baby and grieve and mourn and deal with it. And so we go home and the grief sets in.
Yeah.
You know, and tears, emotional, don't know how to deal with it. You know, and the backstory to that is leading up to that, and I this is what I explained to you the other day. My life had gotten to the point where it was the best it's ever been in my life.
Yeah.
Like all that gratitude and all that abundance and all that giving, like I was giving 10% back of any extra money I had or any extra time I had. I was helping Tracy and Jen doing some of their work. And I was, anytime I would get extra money DJing or selling real estate, I would take 10% of that and do giveaways or go buy things for people, pay for groceries, pay for Starbucks, whatever it was. I was just giving back and being so abundant and grateful. And I was in this place. I felt unstoppable and powerful. And then bam,
yeah,
tragedy. And so 3 days go by of sleeping in, you know, doing this, don't know what to do, don't know how to handle it. And I'm like, no, it's time to get up.
Yeah.
Third day, get up at 5 a.m. in the morning, and I go sit quietly. We're actually, and we're in between houses too. So we're living in my mother-in-law's house. You know, 3 dogs, 5 cats, you know, court sanctioned to our side of the house. So get up on the third day, go make my coffee, go sit in the quiet. You know, I go through a couple guided meditations, and then like I'll just use ambient sound, and that's when I'll thinkitate, you know? And so it strikes me, stories and what happened. And I start just thinking about the loss and, you know, what happened. For an unknown reason, we lost the baby at 38 weeks, you know, and we did all the tests. We knew the medical examiner. We got some people helped us out, and we got some stuff done a little faster, and we found out, and there was nothing. I think what ended up happening is she was low fluid in the, I think it was hydrocephalus or something like that, low fluid, but it, you know, there's nothing that could have changed that, you know? And so what happened? Unknown reason, lost the baby. What are the stories? Oh God.
And that's where it gets.
Yeah. I have it in my phone. I mean, I could read them all to you, but I'm going to keep it short. I'm going to spare you. So it's sad, right? We didn't actually know the sex. So like our story was, we didn't have a connection with the baby.
Mm.
We didn't have a name. We weren't goo goo gaga-ing her tummy as much as we were.
That leaves the guilt, right?
Guilt, oh. Yeah. She got a Tdap and a flu shot, I think, that time. So she's like, did that, you know, she didn't do it on the first one. Did that cause it?
Mm.
You know, and this is where, you know, my faith, not having faith or having faith or whatever you want to kind of comes into play. You know, people say, you know, God took the baby for a reason, or, you know, I was like, or, you know, I can't think of some of the other ones. It's like, God needed an angel, or, you know, whatever the, you know, faith-based ones are. But like, so my sick mind frame, I'm like, well, what if God just felt like being an evil MF-er that day and decided to take our baby? You know, that's sick humor.
Yeah.
You know, but it's like, it's still a story.
Yeah.
It doesn't change what happened in the real world. It's just a story. So it's like, I started thinking, is my way of grieving, you know, effed up? Is it too soon? Am I a bad parent because I'm already trying to move on and get back to that happiness and that gratitude and being appreciative? Because of extreme ownership, I would say it's ours. We got to own it. We got to make the best of it. As terrible as that sounds, I started slowly creeping back into abundance and gratitude and all that, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was a little harder on my wife because still with the hormones or whatever else, the body creeping back. But I would say within a week, so I would meditate. I'd get up. I kept doing it. I kept getting up. I kept practicing gratitude. You know, there's more stories. Actually, I want to touch on the story. So it's like, my way of grieving is effed up. You have to go through the five stages. I'm like, do I?
Yeah.
Do I have to go through all five, or can I just accept it?
Yeah.
Can it be what it is? And that, you know, I don't take blame or take judgment for other people if I grieve too fast. Can I be happy and grateful, even though this is like the worst thing that's ever happened to us? Can I still be happy and grateful that we have a healthy son? You know, can I be happy and grateful that my wife is still alive? Can I, you know?
Yeah.
So I just start thinking back to, you know, the stuff I was reading. I dive back into, I think I was almost to the end of Power of Positive Thinking. I dive back into that. I finished that out. I finished up. I think I was reading Jocko Willink at the time. I finished that out. I started finishing all these books that I was like halfway through. And I'm realizing, man, it is, but it's not the end of the world. And I know that's probably going to be taken back by people who have been through it. You know what I mean? But it was just like, all those tools, all those techniques, all those understandings that I gathered along the way gave me this like power to deal with this.
Yeah.
And to coach my wife through it. You know, I would get up and meditate and I would deal with whatever I'm dealing with. I would find something and be like, okay, I'm dealing with this. She's probably dealing with that too. Hey, babe, this morning when I was up thinking about this, this is what I came across. You know, this is what I found to help me. And I would just leave it at that. I wouldn't probe her. I wouldn't make a big deal about it. I would let her grieve and do what she has to do. Just because I found my way through it doesn't mean
she found
her way through
it. That is important, because one of the things I talk about all the time is grieving is messy and grieving is individual. So how you grieve is different than how I grieve. The thing is, there's nothing wrong with going, hey, this worked for me.
Right.
But the last thing that you should do is force it on people, because when that worked for me, go do it. I've seen this with people in recovery all the time. Well, that form of recovery worked for me, so everybody needs to do recovery like that. Oh, that didn't work for that guy. It didn't work for that girl. So hold on. The 12-step program, all these different things, even treatments, like even people who are going to see a mental health professional. Some people I found just need to go talk to a chaplain and have some faith, have a conversation and pray, and they feel great. Some people need to go see a mental health professional and have counseling. Other people need medication. It's very, very different. And I think that's what you're bringing up, because there are people that will listen to this and go, well, I lost a child and it took me 6 months. Does that mean I'm worse or better? No.
Right.
Everybody has different situations. We're not saying that you have to do it a certain way, but there is a process that you have to figure out for you. And I think that's what you're teaching here. And that's why I really wanted you to talk about this, because for you to be able to sit and process that and go, I can get back to abundance and I can get back to gratefulness. If that takes you a day, or that takes you a year,
right.
It's okay, because we have to get back to the fact where abundance and gratefulness leads our life to where the focus and the perspective can be okay, because there's going to be calls you run that are the worst calls you've ever run in your life. And maybe within 24 hours, you're like, I'm okay. Mm-hmm. And maybe you have to take a couple shifts off.
Right.
And it's okay to walk through that and figure that out, because you and I talked on the phone a couple times. Mm-hmm. And I remember one day you're like, I'm not doing okay. And literally like a week later, you're like, I'm better. Mm-hmm. And I said to you, I'm like, well, how are you better? It's only been a week.
It was all
and,
that.
And we hadn't even really talked about that. But I remember thinking, wow, he's really been able to progress through this. And obviously, we're going to get to more of the story later. But even to see you with your older child, and then you've obviously had a child since then.
Right, yeah, we have.
It's been even cooler for me as an outsider to watch, because you can go, wow, look at where they've come. And it's hard to be abundant and happy if you can't work through that sandwich you were talking about.
Right.
If you can't work through that, you can't begin to then accept the joy and the pleasure and the happiness that comes, because you're so wrapped up in the story. I love that analogy. I've not read the book. I've not been to the conference. But I love that conversation, because it is about your viewpoint. And I know for me, I learned a long time ago, it's your worldview. It's your filter. It's your... How do you see things? Do you see things through this lens that's all cloudy, or do you see it clearly for what it really is? And some really, really good points there.
Yeah, so I'm glad you said that, because when you actually asked me to come see you, I was like, man, I need to put like a disclaimer. Like, just because I do it this way, or just because it worked for me, it doesn't mean it's going to work for the next person. You know what I mean? And that's kind of like the blind spot. It's kind of like the girlfriend or the guy you know that's running the same pattern all the time. You're like, dude, You just got done with the same girl. You're doing the same thing with the same girl and the same, or the girl that dates the same bad boy over and over and
yeah,
over.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Yeah, so it's like, if I come and tell you, you need to change, you're not going to change until mm-hmm. until you figure it out on your own and you yeah. find that blind spot on your own. That's for why sure. I love that program, where it's like, hey, oh, I finally see, like, man, I've been doing this, and yeah. this, and that's why this is these patterns are leading to this result. Maybe I should change this pattern.
Yeah.
Right. And so I don't know. That's my first loss of a baby. I don't know if my way's right yeah. or wrong. It worked for me. It literally was a toolbox that I gathered along the way, and each tool worked.
The point is, you created a toolbox. That's the thing is,
right.
if you don't do anything to prepare yourself, when tragedy strikes, you're not ready. So, right. so I mean, that's really the point is, I tell people in new recruits, new police officers, new military personnel, new firefighters, you are going to see bad stuff. Mm. It is coming. Mm. So don't wait till it happens and then go, wonder how I cope.
Right.
Have a conversation with yourself, at least on that side of things. Mm. You went even deeper than a lot of people do with the meditation. But even just for, I tell people, figure out what you like. Do you like to sit and pray? Do you like to sit and listen to music? Do you like to go hit golf balls? What is it you like to do that gives you some peace, and have a plan so that you can, and it may not work for you right. at the time, but you have two or three things to go. I have three or four things lined up. Here we go. I know for me, it's the back patio, a little bit of music, and just leave me alone. Mm. Occasionally it's raining. I can't do that. So right. what's the next option? So you have, it's a nice patio, isn't it? You just looked at it.
I'm like,
see people
I'm like,
in the
I see an overhang. Yeah. I'm like, what are you talking about?
People without the video can't see. We might have to show them later. So, but I think that's important. It doesn't have to be what you did, mm-hmm. but you had a plan and you were purposeful
I
about it.
But
you were purposeful.
Right.
With yourself. You right. were developing yourself so that you were ready when it happened.
I have a plan now.
Oh, yeah.
I get it now. And like, I would encourage people, when it's hard and when you're running, like, don't run from it. Just, I know it's going to be, you're probably going to cry. You're going to get upset. Lean into it. Just try. That's what I got from Andy Frisella and David Goggins. Lean into the suck. If you're afraid of it, do it. Mm-hmm. If you're afraid you're going to cry, if you're afraid that you're going to have to sit with an emotion and sit with it, do it. Because on the other side, you might just come out on a better aspect of it. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't do that for a while. I would run from my feelings. I would run from extreme ownership. Like, I would put the blame over there or not sit in it. And like, now, because of them and because of those teachings, it's like, if I see a pattern that I don't like, I'll sit and think in it. Like, I'll just lean into it even harder. You know, there's a dark side and a light side.
Yeah.
Use the dark, use the light. Know that the dark's there. Explore it. Try your best not to get caught up in it. Because you can go down that sucky avenue and get stuck down there,
yeah.
you know, but find the tools, or, you know, I have my tools. Everybody, you know, figure out your own technique, but know that there's the other side of the stick.
Yeah.
And that's Abraham Hicks. She talks about, for all the bad, there's good. You know, if you're having negative thoughts, stop. Or if you have negative feelings, sit in those feelings, lean into them, identify them, write them down. Mm-hmm. What am I feeling? See if you can discover where it's coming from. And then just take the time. You don't have to write it. I write them in my phone. I don't, yeah. hand, I don't, you know, I have 1,000 notes in my phone since I've been doing this stuff, exploring everything. Identify it. Do it in the morning. I get up an hour before, I get up at 5 a.m. That's what I do. I get up at 5 a.m. now. It's the only time I can get quiet time. It's the only time I can get anything done with the kids and the wife. If I don't get up and do it, my day is destroyed because I'm a nastier person. Not that I'm a nasty person, but the morning is my chance to clear all my BS and move forward. So anyways, lean into it. See what the other side of the stick is. Mm-hmm. I dealt with it. I yeah. leaned into it. I did my best to handle it head on, extreme ownership it, and see what the other side of the coin is.
So what has that led to with your family now? Because I know that you had done your preparation to be a better father, a better husband, better firefighter, all those things. You go through the tragedy. You walk through, you deal with it. Obviously, there's still moments where I'm sure there's pain and there's anguish that come from it. But what, I mean, obviously, okay, you have another child. It doesn't mean, oh, everything's fine now. What has been the focus to then allow you to continue to be a good father and a better father, a good husband and a better husband, a good firefighter and a better firefighter? How do you do that?
Yeah. I mean, being a good father and a good husband, you'd have to ask my wife. You know what I mean? No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, I mean, I have my bad days. Absolutely. I'm pretty sure I was in a rut like a week and a half, 2 weeks ago. But I noticed. I was able to see the pattern.
Yeah.
And she knows if I'm like, we get tired. Think about our job. Sleep is terrible.
Yeah.
Like, we're run down. We get tired. When I'm tired, I'm reactive. There's like,
oh yeah.
There's no good.
And that's most people, I think. Yeah.
And I've mastered the 20-minute cat nap. Like, that's my thing. If I start seeing that I'm being reactive with my wife, because I'll pay attention. Like, am I responding to my wife and my child, or am I reacting?
Yeah.
And you know, it was very important for me to learn to respond to my child. The first time that he talked back to me the way my wife and I would talk back to each other.
Mm-hmm.
So one of us snapped one day, and the next day and a half, Jacob says the same thing. I can't remember what it was. You know what I mean? Don't talk to me that way or whatever it was. I don't know.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I look at my wife. I'm like, babe, I think it's time to think about how we're talking to each other and how we're responding to each other. You know, he said so many cuss words because I'm a sailor. But so all that, you know, I dove back into the self-development. You know, I got away from it for a while. And you can call it self-help. You can call it mindfulness. Call it whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
I went back to learning and reading. Like, I pride myself on learning. If I do something wrong, teach me how to do it right.
Yeah.
You know, if I failed, or maybe it's not the right way, just teach me another way, you know? And so I started thinking about how I am with my wife, how, like, all the learning I did, and mm-hmm. I noticed how it helped in tragedy. What if I start diving into things related to fatherhood and diving into things related to, you know, being a husband? And so I have a plethora of books, and I'm reading like 8 of them at a time. And like, I'm just like, okay, good tip. You know, I just jump around.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'll flip to the back of the book, or I'll just move around. Like,
yeah.
But I'll get up in the morning, 5 a.m., make my coffee, meditate 20, 30 minutes, depending on the day. Sometimes it's a guided meditation. Then the last, you know, 15, 20 minutes, I'll sit there and just think and find what's bothering me, where I'm being reactive, where I'm responding, what's good, what's bad. And then I'll move into reading. I'll put it on like just sound, and I'll sit there and I'll read, you know, read until shift, read until the kids come up, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's helped me grow. It's a lot. Talk about, you know, what's going on now, 2020 and COVID, like, you're locked at home. In the beginning, you're locked at home with a toddler.
Yeah.
Terrorist, I think is the word. you know, serious. But, you know, I'm also careful with my words. I don't like to call him a terrorist.
Not to his face.
Not to his face. Anyways, I call it the terrific threes. You know what I mean? I try to make the best of it. I do my best. And sometimes it's messy. Sometimes it's right. Sometimes it's wrong. And I've learned that sometimes there is no right and wrong. You know what I mean? There just is. And when you do something a certain way, if the reaction that came from it is wrong, you know, wasn't what you expected, or the pattern you ran was not what you expected, it's time to break the pattern or set something in. My wife and I ran a very bad pattern for a long time. We didn't even know it was there until this work, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, she would say something, it would set me off, either my ego or my not good enough. You know, you grow up with all kinds of things, you know, not feeling adequate in certain spots. She would trigger me. And then I trigger her.
Yeah.
And then we're just back and forth. And one day I just look at her and go, this pattern needs to stop.
Yeah.
I can't keep running this pattern. We can't keep doing this. It's starting to have Jacob say things that we don't like saying. I don't like saying this. I don't like being this way with you.
Yeah.
You know, I would much rather just come in and be happy, go lucky, you know, have fun with you, have fun with the kids. Like, I don't like being that negative person with you or the kids. And the terrorist, he would do things. He'd push you to your limit. Daddy, can we go to the pool? Daddy, can we go to the pool? They have a one-track mind. Daddy, can we go to the pool? Daddy, 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 daddy. Ah! You know, you erupt.
Yeah.
And so I had to find a tool.
Yeah.
I started diving into these books. Somebody turned me on to 1-2-3 Magic. And it's basically, instead of telling him no 1,000 times until you blow up, because toddlers aren't going to blow up.
Yeah.
They're just going to keep going. So it's like, I get this tool. It's 1-2-3 Magic. And you tell them, hey, this is how things are going to go now. If you're doing something we don't like, or, you know, we need you to change, like, something, you know, we want you to do something else, we're going to say 1. We're going to count to 5. If you don't figure it out, we're going to say 2. You have till 3 to figure it out. You have 5 more seconds. If you don't figure it out, I say three, you go to your room for 3 minutes. And the book claims that it's written for like adults and kids to read, so kids can read it and see what mommy and daddy are trying mm-hmm. to teach them to do. And that changed my life. Hmm. That changed my way with him. Sometimes I still get caught up in the old patterns, but I catch it, or we catch each other, and then we go back to it. And now there's no arguing with him or trying to negotiate with the terrorist. There's no negotiating with terrorists.
Even the government doesn't do that.
Yeah, you know what I mean? So it's like, hey, buddy, we'll go later. He doesn't know what later is.
Yeah.
Hey, buddy, daddy said later. Mommy, daddy won't go. No, son, dad said we will go later. And so it's like, why are we?
Yeah.
So we use that, and now I don't have to argue with him. I don't have to turn into, I don't want to react to him.
Yeah.
I want to coach him. I want to teach him. I want to get instill values and instill things in him. But I don't want to always be this, you know, trying to frame him into this little mold and keep him in this little box and have to react every time.
Well, and you've gone even beyond that and been very proactive with him with some of the affirmations.
Right.
And you shared that with me the day when we were talking about this. And I really thought that was, I mean, obviously technology is a lot different than when my daughter was that mm-hmm. age. So you've kind of used some technology to help with that, but kind of talk through how that developed and what you've developed it into.
Okay. Yeah. So, goes back to the course for the most part, the blind spots and the, you don't know what you don't know and the neuro-linguistic programming and, you know, phrases like, I started diving into limiting beliefs. Like you grow up believing a certain thing.
Yeah.
Your parents instilled them. Your friends instilled them. You learned them on TV. Whatever it is, you have all these things that you learned, mm-hmm. whether you know them or not. Those patterns you're running. Yeah. So I started exploring them. And my parents did an amazing job. I love my parents. They're awesome.
It sounds like you're about to say something bad about your parents.
I am. There's a but. I actually ended up getting a fight with my good friend and my brother in Tennessee. We were drinking. But there was a giant but. And I think it set my brother off. And then my friend actually stuck around to hear it. But I'm like, but, and they didn't mean to.
Yeah.
But I took it. Maybe I did. Maybe I didn't take it a certain way. But some phrases, money doesn't grow on trees.
Yeah.
Right. It doesn't. But where does it come from? Like,
I need it to grow somewhere.
Yeah. And so that's where Bob Proctor comes in. He talks about you earn money.
Yeah.
You don't make it. It's made in the, you know, it's printed and made by the government or made by whoever, you know. You earn it by a level of service.
Yeah.
And so you want to earn more money? Provide a better service.
Yeah.
You know? The other one was life's a bee and then you die. And so like growing up as a kid, like I remember hearing that and it was her way of saying, cut the behavior out.
Yeah.
It happened. It is what it is. Move on. Yeah. Like, and I didn't know at the time. I know what she meant.
Yeah.
But on a lower level, life's a, and then you die.
Yeah.
It's a little depressing.
Yeah.
You know? And so going back to like the mantras and affirmations, and I was never a big affirmation guy. I always thought that was hoopla. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But like when I started diving into power of positive thinking and what you say to yourself and what you hear and what you read and what you whatever, it makes total sense.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially when I started saying things to myself a different way, my life went in a totally different direction.
Yeah.
You know? And so on the other side of the coin, my mom did used to say, stop listening to that hip hop and that dirty rap music when I was growing up. But at the time, I didn't know what she was talking about. Yeah. It wasn't like, hey, what you're feeding your brain is what you're going to live into. Yeah. And to me, it was just music. My rebuttal was, mom, I'm not listening so much to the words as much as I'm enjoying the beat. Like enjoying
because
the
groove. Because I'm going to be a DJ one day.
Yeah, who knew? You know what I mean? Enjoying the groove line, you know.
Did you do this when you were a kid? Did you do that?
You know, I started diving on all this stuff and I started thinking about things I'm like, how we're speaking to Jacob and mm-hmm. how he's starting to repeat some of the stuff back to us that we're saying to each other and how we're interacting with each other. And then I think this was the one that set me off. One day, we put them on YouTube Kids occasionally. We always said we were never going to do it, but like, you got to get stuff done around the house.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. It's a blessing and a curse, this technology, you know? One day he goes, I can't. I wanted to. What? You don't say that word.
Yeah.
That's a bad word. You know, like I was like, why is he saying that? Like, and it was on simple stuff that like he was already doing, but all of a sudden now he's saying, I can't. Mm-hmm. I never taught him that.
Yeah.
I'm assuming it came from YouTube Kids, television, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, we put him in front of these random things.
Yeah.
So now I'm like, what is he watching?
Yeah.
And like, we're starting to pay attention to what's on these channels. And like, some of it is garbage.
Oh, yeah.
And some of it's like grown adults dressed up as little kids. And I'm like, whoa.
Yeah.
So we start limiting that and we start paying attention to that. But I'm like, man, I start hearing other things.
Yeah.
I'm afraid. I'm scared. I'm like, where is this coming from?
Yeah.
You know, is it learned? I don't say those things. Mm. And so I'm thinking, man, what if I could just start instilling some things in him to counteract that? And I don't know where, it wasn't immediately. I came up with something to counteract the I can't, but I came up with I can. And then I was like, I can and I will. And then so I started saying, I can and I will. I can and I will. Anytime he said I can, I said, Jacob, I can and I will. And then I'd help him along to push through it, you know? Mm-hmm. And then I was like, man, he said, I'm scared. Jacob, say I'm brave. And like, I just started like at night spitfiring. I'm like, hey man, look in the mirror, like before brushing his teeth or after he's brushing his teeth, say, I am brave. I am strong. He was maybe 2.5, 3 at the time. I don't remember. But I am brave. I am strong. I can. I will. And then it blew up. Like I just started adding them and adding them and adding them. And I'd come up with them. And like I'd be in the car driving to the gym. And I'd be like, hey, Jacob, say, I am strong. I am brave. And then one day he just starts saying, out of nowhere, he's like, I am strong. I am brave. I can and I will. Like he starts saying it. And I'm like, okay, that's better than I can't and I'm afraid. You know what I mean? But now he's getting all independent. He's like, I'm going to jump in the deep end. You know, like now he's doing stuff. I'm like, okay, let's dial that back just a little bit there, chief. You can't swim yet. And so, but anyways, you know, we would read books at night. And I actually, there was a certain book. It was a gratitude book. Thank You, a Good Night is what it's called. It's a really good book. But it's like, you know, I would read it to him every night because I was practicing my gratitude. I'm like, I need something to help him because me just saying it to him isn't enough. Like I need him to like see it, believe it, you know, start buying into it. So I get this book and it's like, you know, thank you for my bed. Thank you for the light. Thank you for the sun. Thank you for the flowers. Thank you for the bees. Thank you for the strawberries. Thank you for grandma, grandpa. Thank you for, you know, this pillow. Thank you. Whatever. It goes on. It's a story. Mm-hmm. And so then I'm like, man, how cool would it be to like take pictures of him and his friends and his you know, his cousins and me and him and me and his mom and everybody and putting affirmations over it. So like I came up with this, like I was gonna, so Amazon, you can make a book and I went to go upload everything and the photo resolution was off. So I still have to fix it. But I was gonna make this book that like at night, we could just flip through. And so in the meantime, I have the photos on my phone. So I was like, we'd go in, you know, we'd go in bed and I'd read them to him. It's like, I am happy. I am brave. I am sweet. You know, I am adventurous. I share because I care. I am more than enough. I am a learner. I am free to be me. He's fishing naked. I am loved. I am a lover. I am confident. I have the freedom to choose. I have a positive mental attitude. I am grateful. I can and I will. That was his first fish.
Yeah.
So he wasn't good at casting or whatever, you know, and finally he did and he caught the fish and I'm like, it was perfect. I am abundant. And this is weird. I practice, you know, universal laws and believing in infinite power and everything. And the worm that we were using that day is in the infinity sign. So I thought that was really cool. I'm abundant. I am a leader. And that's my side of the family, the three generations.
Mm-hmm.
I always do my best. This one, I got to work on the wording, but it's like, I find fun and ease in all situations. So like, it's a little mouthy for him. Yeah. So I just say, I find fun.
Mm-hmm.
I choose happiness. I am generous. I am a good listener. I am focused. I am strong. I am coachable and teachable. And so time goes on. And now it's like, I go to put in bed and sometimes I'm tired and I just want to, cause I lay on the bear, give him 5 minutes. I'm like, you got 5 minutes. Good bit, son. You know, sometimes I read the book or whatever. Now he's like, daddy, affirmations. Daddy affirmations. That's like awesome. Now he's asking to see the photos and read the words.
Yeah.
And it's also like a cool moment where, you know, I'll lean into him and we're kind of like nuzzling and hugging and being with each other, you know? And like, sometimes I'll get an I love you daddy at the end. And like, that's like the heart melting moment. It's like, all right, you got me kid, you know? And he knows how to manipulate the system already. Mommy, I love you. My wife's like, what do you want? What do you want, kid? Little terrorist. So it's really cool to see all those, you know, it's cool to see him develop. And like in some of the books I read, like I read a lot of the parenting and the like, I started diving into those because I'm like, man, I don't even know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I have no clue. I'm doing my best. Yeah. But it's like, I started thinking about some of the limiting beliefs that like, you know, I started to see that my parents didn't mean to, they were just phrases or whatever, but it's like, you start to think about some of the stuff that you grew up hearing and it's like, man, Well, it can dictate the rest of your life.
Yeah, and I think as when you become a parent, you understand your parents better, obviously, but you also typically emulate their behavior and their parenting. My parents are great. I took a lot of that from them. We've had conversations about things that I think, we probably should have talked about that when I was younger. You should have explained that. We've had conversations because you're not going to do everything perfect. Uh-huh. My daughters, we've talked about some things that we did wrong as her parent. Uh-huh. So I think you walk through that and you figure out what's good and use it and get rid of the bad. And I think there's a passage of scripture that talks about removing the curse from your family. Uh-huh. So like you can't just go, well, we've always done it this way. It's always been bad. Let's just keep doing it.
Fire service. Yeah,
exactly. 100 years of tradition unimpeded by progress is a fire service. So same sort of thing is how I'm do we kidding. Learn from the positive and use that? And how do we learn from the negative and go, hey, I'm not going to repeat that? So Josh, one of the things that we talked about was that you have made it very intentional that you're going to hang out and spend time with your son. Now, as a firefighter who works 24-hour shifts and comes home.
And as a DJ.
Yeah, and a DJ. Daddy daycare sometimes takes on a new meaning, and now you have two. Mm-hmm. But I thought some of the posts you made were hilarious. So that one was, I'll never forget it. One was, well, Jake and I are hanging out, daddy daycare, who wants to hang? And you took suggestions, and you ended up going with somebody somewhere. I can't remember what it was. But the other night you had a video of you guys playing soccer inside the house. Mm-hmm. And I mean, with COVID, you've had to get a little more creative, obviously. We talked about you DJing for your son. How it can't just be that, oh, I just love spending time with my son all the time and it's amazing. Sometimes I'm sure it's a little bit of a chore. So how as a parent have you made that intentional, and how have you created those activities, and what has that kind of done for your relationship?
Yeah, so the intentional part's a good question because it actually triggered something to me, and it's that you've probably seen the meme. It's like the dad that's working, the son comes and taps him on the shoulder, wants to play, and he's like, not now, or he's busy or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then like it goes on, and then the son repeats the behavior, or you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like you neglect the child, and then he gets, you know, behaviors around that. Well, one day with my wife, I'm like, I feel like anytime he asks me to do something, I just need to say yes. I just need to do it, whatever it is at that moment. Because I can come up with a million excuses to be busy, be tired, whatever, but it's like, daddy, you want to play dinosaurs? No, I don't feel like playing dinosaurs right now. I got a bad shift. I want to go take a nap, you know? But it's like, I could come up with a million and one excuses. So it's like, I would just be like, you know what? Yeah, Jake, I do. And I would just go play with him. And
tell us about dinosaurs.
I can't name them all. He likes the guy with the ram. He loves the T-Rex. And so one of my most recent ones, I had to get creative because he's in like, with COVID and the heat, it's so hot outside. I got the 6, 8 month old, how old is he, 9 months? And it's like, I feel bad trying to go outside and play with Jacob and put the little one in the heat, you know? Yeah. When it was a little cooler, we were out in the yard playing soccer, we were playing baseball, we were, you know, doing whatever, and not a big deal. So I don't know. Sometimes they hit me, sometimes they don't. I don't always want to do it. You know, I would love to sit here and say, I love every minute of it. I just don't. I mean, there's just days where I'm like, you are wearing me down, kid. And I've had to gut check myself. And it's like, man, like, it's terrible because I love this little guy and I want to make him happy and do all the things for him. But it's like, I had to start like making time for myself. And I guess that's what the 5 a.m. was. But it's like, even that sometimes is not enough. You know, I need, especially with this COVID, sometimes you need to just like get out of the house and get away from them. And it's kind of tough with this situation. So I've definitely struggled here and there, but in terms of the creativeness, it's like, I'll see something on, what's the name of that? TikTok. I'll see something on YouTube, or like his fascination with this new show, which it's an okay show. I'm not against it, but it's like Park Ranger Aaron. They like go around and they fake, like they CGI dinosaurs into it. So they're like acting during the time, the time. And I'm like, I'm sick of watching this. You're watching the same thing all the time. You're always in front of the TV. We need to come up with something. So one day I was just like, hey, let's, I was like, I told my wife, I'm like, listen, I'm going to do a dinosaur hunt. I got the county boonies, put it on his head. I found a flashlight. You know, I gave him little radios, and I had my wife set up dinosaurs all over the place. And like, we created this little like dinosaur hunt, like we were going to recreate the thing. And I was like, hey, I'll film it. I just come up with stuff. I don't know. Yeah. And I'll think, what is he into right now? And then I'll try to recreate it.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's spontaneous. Sometimes it's to get my own self out of my funk. Like,
yeah,
I'll be tired. I don't want to do anything, or just like, habitual. I'll come in and, not want to deal with them. And it's like, man, I gotta shake this. Like,
yeah.
I can't stay in this. I can't meditate because they're right in front of me. I can't get out of my own way.
Yeah.
So sometimes I just gotta get up and go play soccer in the house or play tag or just hide and go seek or just say yes the one time he asked me because yeah. I'm not that parent. I'm not that person that just naturally wants to, I mean, yes and no. I'm not 100%, you know? Yeah. I'm 50, 60, 70%. I want to do stuff with my kids.
But being willing to say yes is what we're talking about.
Right.
And it's being willing to say, hey, I'm not in the mood right now, but I'm going to do this because it means enough to me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really where, and I think that's kind of what I wanted you to share is because the affirmations are great, all that, but even just the activity of saying, hey, we're going to spend the next 20 minutes together and we're going to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And it changes their life. It changes their trajectory and it changes your relationship with them. So that's really what I wanted to bring you on here is just to be able to share, hey, this is one individual who's figured out a way to develop himself, develop his family, deal with grief, not even intentionally. And then how do I take that and become better? Even for people just to hear, I dove into this, I dove into that. And, oh, I dove into a parenting book. Whoa. Yeah. Find out how to do it. Talk to people who've done it before. Talk to people who've raised good kids.
Mm.
I remember when I first moved down here to Florida, there was a pastor at my church and he walked up to me. We're having a conversation. He goes, can I talk to you about something for a second? I was 20, 21 years old. I go, what's up? He goes, I'd like to ask you what you think your parents did right. I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, well, you're a good, a nice young man. He goes, whenever I find a good young adult, I try to ask him what their parents did. He goes, because I want to do the same thing for my kids.
Mm.
He had newborns. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And then guess what it did? It got me to think about what my parents did really well. So
what they did?
Oh, I don't remember now. they're actually coming to town today, so I don't want to build up their ego too much.
Yeah.
I mean, part of it is just open communication. Part of it is being real. I know to grow up in a very strict religious environment and to be able to have some training and learning and teaching, but then to have them go, okay, we hear that. Here's what really is, let me explain what's happening behind the scenes. Let me explain to you how real world works, to teach me the importance of education, to teach me the importance of servant leadership, to teach me the importance of a work ethic. Those are things. And so to this day, two people that I talk to all the time because I love them and care about them. I think that we take those things and we learn from it. And it really goes back to this fire family we've been talking about. Is we can develop that within our circles. You know, the department we work for is almost 1,500 people in it.
Mm-hmm.
There's other departments around here with one, two stations, with, 60 people. And whatever that range is, the people you work with on a daily basis is part of that family.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we develop the relationships with them? And then how do we expand that into our family so that the people we work with that we care about have an influence on our kids?
Mm-hmm.
The people that we don't want to have an influence on our kids don't get to. Like,
mm-hmm.
That's our job as parents, I think. But that's just one microcosm of all of this we're talking about is how do we keep getting the right influence into us? How do we make sure the right influence gets right? And then also, how do we take that person that's not a great parent or not a great person, not a great friend, and how do we try to help them in the fire service? These are things that are way outside of our normal scope of thing because we're like, hey, can you go in and fight that fire? Can you run the cardiac arrest call with me? Okay, we're good. Which is true. But how do we then continue to develop, which is, my role in our department is professional development is to go, how do we start to talk about spirituality? How do we start to talk about mentoring? How do we start talking about coaching, teaching, training, meditation? All of these pieces are important. And it's really why I wanted you to come on here because it's taking the person and going, how do I develop all of me?
Mm-hmm.
How do I make sure that I'm the best husband, wife, mother, father, brother, sister, parent, firefighter. We are humans
mm-hmm.
who happen to be firefighters.
Right.
We are not firefighters who happen to be humans. And we're talking about first responders here. You're not a cop first. You're not a military personnel mm-hmm. first. You're not an EMS worker first. You're not a healthcare worker first. You are a person, a human. And I say it all the time, a human who happens to be this other stuff. And if you get your identity caught up in just this thing, career, you're done because eventually it's going to go away.
Yeah. So it makes me think of Tom Bilyeu, and this is like one of my key identities now. And it's like he tells a story. He says like as he was growing and developing, if you pride yourself on being the strongest in the room, there's always going to be somebody stronger down mm-hmm. the road. You're going to get old. You're going to get decrepit. If you pride yourself on being the smartest in the room, there's a chance there's always somebody smarter. It's like if you pride yourself on being a learner,
Hmm. I love that.
You can fail. You can mess up. You can be with the smartest. You can be with the strongest, because guess what? You just look around and you say, what's this guy doing that I can learn how to do?
Yeah.
And it's work. Unfortunately, it is work. Like, everything I'm doing is work. Like, it's not, if I just go about my business, I turn into this reactive pattern running person. But if I get up at 5 a.m., I read some books, I meditate, and I think about how I want to be and who I want to be, my day is different. I am different. Results come in a different, more efficient manner than if I just wake up and go about my day. Yeah. You know what I mean?
It's intentionality.
Yeah. And it's not, my way's not right or wrong. I know that. And I'm not the best at anything I'm doing. Everything I've learned has come from other people. I haven't developed anything. I haven't come up with anything. It's just, I was tired of being certain ways or seeing patterns and blind, you know what you don't know. Blind spots were, thrown in my face. And once they're thrown in your face, you can either live with it or you can start making changes. Yeah. And unfortunately, fortunate for me, I wanted to do the work. You know, some people don't want to do the work. You got to want to do the work. You got to want to get up. And even though it sucks, you got to lean into it. And even though you might not want to do it that day, you do it that day. Like at my station, me and my driver have like an agreement. It's like, we'll come in and like, we'll start talking. We're like, we're going to work out today. We're going to do this today. And like, we have this agreement that like, because we don't want to do it, guess what? We're going to do it. You know what I mean? Like, you don't want to do it? Go do it.
Yeah.
Because there's something, there's a reward on the other side of the stuff you don't want to do. The hard stuff, there's always going to be a reward on the other side of that stuff.
Thank you for joining us, because I think the principles you're talking about can be learned. Mm-hmm. And whatever works for you, do it. Make yourself better. Become the better person. You'll become a better firefighter too. Become the better person. And that's really the message we want to get. So thanks for joining us.
Yeah, you just got to step out of your comfort zone and know that you don't know everything.
So as we've talked about, kind of determining who your family is, as a first responder family, your immediate family, extended family, how we help. We've also discussed with Josh about what it looks like on a day-to-day basis, working at a fire station and then coming home and dealing with family and really being brutally honest about some of those negative emotions that come and how you work through those, and even dealing with tragedy. And in the first responder world, the departments we work for, the municipalities, often have a say in how this plays out. And we want to kind of finish with this conversation for those of you who are watching and just aren't sure what to do on a departmental basis from a larger agency perspective. We really need you to understand is, first of all, there is definitely a need. It is important for you to have a trained team prepared. And that trained team doesn't have to be a bunch of psychologists or clinicians. It could be some firefighters who really care about mental health. It could be some firefighters who care about just taking care of their brother and sister firefighters, first responders. It could be clinicians. It could be people in your department. It could be chaplains. It could be social workers. A lot of people that can be involved in this. But what you want to do is get a trained team. And the importance is this. There needs to be some basic compassion training. When there's a loss, when there's a tragedy in a fire service, Josh shared about the loss of their child. If you don't have anything in place, then all that happens is the people that work with Josh, if they have some basic understanding of human decency, come show up and go, how do we help? And maybe they bring some meals over and maybe they start a plan for how to bring meals for a few days. And really, there's not a whole lot else that happens. In fact, wrong things get said, as Josh mentioned earlier. Well, maybe God intended this, or some of those horrible things that get said because people just don't know what else to say or what to do. So because of that, what we want you to understand is if you could start to have some trainings, maybe it's once every 6 months, maybe it's once every year for that group of 3 people, that group of 10 people. Maybe you have a bigger department where you can have 25, 30 people who really believe in this. And the idea would be, how do we have basic compassion training? How do we talk about the 5 stages of grief? How do we talk about the fact that, as Josh mentioned, you may not have to go through all the stages. You may be okay a little quicker. How do we deal with the people who are dealing with this over a longer period of time? Have some training, have conversations, have buy-in from the chiefs, have buy-in from your administration, say, this is what we believe in. For us at our department, we have a social worker that works with our mobile integrated health or community paramedicine team, and we're fortunate to have that. But that individual often will step out of that role and be the social worker for us and go, let me help you get resources. Because if we have a team of people who know what the resources are around, we may say, hey, this is what's next. I don't know if a lot of people know, but for a firefighter, a line of duty death, there are benefits that come to that family. There are actual money, dollars and cents that come to the family for children to get educated. We found this out after a line of duty death a few years back and didn't even know anything about it. These are things that are available. Memorial services, plans, ceremonial. Those are pieces that can all be done by these groups. Another thing that is important is training family liaisons. It's important for you to have a point person who can deal with all the stuff. We call it the gatekeeper, the liaison. So there's a loss in a family. The entire fire department goes, we're here to help. And they show up. Well, if there's not one person who can handle all those requests, it can get very, very overwhelming, especially in a large department. So develop a family liaison program. Have individuals who are trained to say, I can be that gatekeeper so I can go, family, what do you need? What do you need? And then we can send a message out to the entire department that says, here's what officer so-and-so needs. Here's what this individual needs. Here's what we need to do for them. So we need you all to stay away for the next 2 days and offer privacy. Let the family deal with this grief. We need the lawn mowed. We need meals to come in. We need something to be done at the house. Whatever it is, now that message gets out and now those firefighters, now those police officers, now those military personnel can go, oh, there's something I can do. And they show up and it's organized. It's in an organized fashion. These seem like very common sense things, but a lot of departments don't understand this and have never set that in motion. The other thing is have some type of help for those people who operate in the family liaison position, because when they're done, they're going to be exhausted and they need probably some time off. We've talked in our department about possibly giving a shift or two off after that, just to allow them time to recharge themselves, because they're handling so much depending on the level of loss that takes place. And then utilize your technology. There are apps out there. There are things called, I think there's one's called the Genius app, and it allows you to actually set up times to actually bring meals. What a huge concept, right? We had a loss in our department a few years back, and somebody tried to organize this and didn't do a very good job. They were very well intentioned. And the next thing you know, there was a refrigerator full of food and a refrigerator in the garage full of food. And this husband and wife, nobody else in the family, had months and months of food that they were never going to get through that was going to go bad. Well, that's not utilizing our resources well. So let's plan these things out. I'll bring this. Here's how many people are there. And there's apps out there that will help you actually do that to figure out if there's allergies in the home, things like that as well. The other thing I want you to do is this. We want to make sure that you follow up. Please make sure that you follow up with people once they have a loss and once the loss is done. If this team of people is trained well, the funeral gets over. The loss is handled and dealt with, and then what happens is we go on our way. Well, there needs to be people that continue to follow up. Maybe there's children that are involved because an officer or a firefighter has lost their life. And years later, we need to be still following up with those individuals to make sure they have what they need, that we as a municipality, as a department, continue to take care of them if possible. The culture that we have is very, very good. We actually help people very, very well. We jump in, we help wherever we can. But sometimes we don't know what to do. So the department can step in and say, here's how to make sure this is done the right way. That's why it's important to have this buy-in. And a lot of times it's very simple. You just simply say, who are the people interested in doing this? How do we get them involved? And then put somebody in charge of the group. That group then has a mission, has a focus. They get the training they need to continue helping. There may be months that go by. There, in a department in a smaller size, you may have years that go by where you don't need to be doing anything. There's not anything active to do. And then all of a sudden the loss comes, you're prepared because you stay trained, you stay ready to go. And what we really need to do is start talking about this all over the culture of the department and from all different positions. If you can get buy-in from your top down, that's huge. But also you need to be talking about it with all of your new people. Anybody who comes in and gets hired needs to understand, here's what we offer to you. Here's what our department will give you at any moment. And make sure that officer, that firefighter's spouse, significant other knows about those as well, because what happens is the firefighter, the officer goes, I'm good. And the spouse or significant other can go, I remember that resource. You're not good. Let me get you help. That's what we need to be doing, is communicating that, because that's how we change the culture. And what really happens is you grow this team. You make sure that there's opportunities to keep adding members to that team, because what will happen is people will time out, they'll retire, they'll move on, and then new people can come in and take those places. But we have to make it a point. If you as a department aren't sure what to do, just take the first step. Even call us. Have a conversation with us at the collaborative. Talk about what those resources are, because there are policies out there. There are SOGs. There are all kinds of documents that can be used by other departments that can be passed on to you. You literally just take off all their information and put yours on it. It's these are protocols and policies that are put in place, ready to help. Utilize them. Take them. You're not stealing. You're borrowing appropriately, and you're being given permission. Use them, because that allows you to have a policy in place to go, here's how we respond to this. Here's what happens when someone dies in the line of duty. Here's what we offer them. Here's what happens when someone dies off duty. Here's how we handle it. Here's the type of funeral that comes. These are all policies that can be made, but you don't have to start from scratch. Use what's out there. And then lastly, start adding to that team and continue to publicize, and then thank these individuals for what they do. Recognize them. Let them know they are making a difference, because what will happen is new people will come along and step into those roles, and you'll find out, wow, this is a person who has a compassion ability to help others. Utilize your department as a tool to help your people. Don't just be a department that says, well, we're going to be the best police officers, the best trained in SWAT and tactics. We're going to be the best firefighters and EMS personnel, and we're going to be able to respond to cardiac arrest the best we can. All those are good things. But you also have to take care of the whole person. Allow yourself to find ways to take care of your individuals beyond just the X's and O's of the job. In my department, we've been fortunate enough, they allowed me to start a professional development library years ago. We have hundreds of books. It didn't cost very much money. We went out and found the right ones, got paperback versions, and we got them involved. And we said, listen, if you want more, let us know. If you have recommendations, let us know. We've got books on parenting, mentoring, coaching, finances. We have books from some of the military authors from the past. History, some of the lessons we've learned from history. Management, marketing. We've talked about personal improvement, personal growth. We have books in there about spirituality. We've developed a lot of these pieces so that people have somewhere to go. We've actually allowed in our department so that our EAP counselors know about this resource. So they're counseling. They can go, hey, just so you know, there's a book at your professional development library, which is in our training division, just a little room. It's not very big. And they can just walk in and grab a book, go, hey, I was told this kind of applies to my situation. There's all kinds of ways we can help, but we have to make sure we're offering that to individuals. We have firefighters, police officers, and military personnel who are struggling with everyday stuff beyond just the job, beyond just the calls that we run, beyond what we've seen and experienced. There are people dealing with finances, people dealing with family issues, and people dealing with loss. We have to make sure we're taking care of that whole person. Whatever that looks like for you, be intentional about it. Be focused about it. The lessons we learned from Josh today about what he did in his own personal life are great. We should be doing that individually ourselves, but as a department, we should be doing the same thing. How do we help develop the entire person? We serve and work with humans, not firefighters, not cops, not healthcare workers, humans. Humans who need us to love and care for them. Please take the time to do that for your people. Thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. If you have any questions, please let us know. Please reach out. We would love to help you any way we can. Thank you.